Our next speaker, Les Mauser, is a member of the Gubba Gubba, and he's the from the, what is it, Butchola? What is it? Butchola Nations from Southeast Queensland. He has over 30 years' experience in policy and program roles working with the Commonwealth and Queensland Public Services. Les was the founding president of the Foundation for Aboriginal and Islander Research Association and was appointed general manager of the of that organisation in 1994. He was also the Secretary General of the National Aboriginal Conference in 1984-85. Between 1990 and 1994, Les was employed as the Director of Queensland's Department of Aboriginal and Island Affairs. He then was engaged as the Executive Assistant to the first elected ATSIC Chairperson, Jeff Clark, in 2000-2002. For the past 5 years, Les has been an NGO delegate at the United Nations and currently holds the position of Chairperson of the Global Indigenous Caucus to the UN. Les assisted in coordinating a campaign at the UN headquarters in New York for the adoption of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Ladies and gentlemen, please give you a round of applause for Les Mauser.
Thank you very much. I'd like to acknowledge the Aboriginal people who are the owners of this land, the Gadigal, Eora peoples. I also like to acknowledge all Aboriginal people are the owners of all the land, and acknowledge the Redfern community in particular for the opportunity to be able to speak here today. I'd also like to thank the organisers for today. I believe the New South Wales Land Council and the people here at the Redfern Community Centre have done an excellent job to bring this issue up and to keep it alive and, as Michael has said, to make things happen about these. This is the first opportunity I've had to speak back in Australia in a public meeting. I spent almost a full year in New York on the job of trying to lobby the adoption of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. I won't go into details, but I ended up in the position in June last year of being the global chairperson for the Indigenous Peoples Caucus at the UN, representing seven regions of the world, the Indigenous peoples of the regions of the world, and under that basis I was in New York to coordinate to make sure that in its final stage of adoption by the General Assembly that the declaration wasn't sabotaged by those states, those governments that were hostile to it. I hope all of you know the news on that, that on the 13th of September this year, the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples was adopted by the UN General Assembly. It was by 144 votes. I think some records say 143, but it was actually 144 votes in favour, 4 votes against. And you probably would have heard the ones who voted against: Australia, Canada, New Zealand and USA. And that says more about those 4 countries than it says about the Declaration. I wanted to talk on the Declaration and about it and then come back to picking up from the points that Michael was made about the issues back home. Who are we? What are we doing? But I think I can say without a skerrick of doubt that the Declaration represents a new order for Indigenous peoples all around the world, and particularly in places like Australia, where as the UN has progressed over 25 years to get this declaration concluded, Australia has wound back. It has taken out rights. It has removed legislation. It has removed programs. It has removed representatives of the community and so on. So the world has been going in one direction. Australia has been heavily heading in the other direction. And I believe very much motivated by the fact that in the United Nations things were progressing, Australia did the exact opposite out of pure belligerence and pure spite against the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander peoples in this country. The Declaration is only a declaration. It is not laws. It doesn't change the laws in Australia. It's a declaration. It's not a treaty. A treaty is when governments sign on to make a commitment to implement declarations or implement human rights standards that are adopted by the General Assembly. But don't be fooled. This declaration will have more effect on our lives, the lives of Indigenous peoples around the world, than any treaty has in the past, than any other document has in the past. It will ultimately affect our lives. It is going to enter into all the laws around the world, including into Australia. It has already worked its way into jurisprudence in the draft stages, into decisions being made in South Africa, recognising the rights of Indigenous peoples to their lands and territories. In the last week, it has worked its way into decisions being made in the courts in Guyana in relation to the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And we saw a bit of it in the Mabo decision in 1991, We saw a bit of it in there where there was reference to what was in the draft declaration and what was happening overseas. But it's just the start. It is just the start of what's going to happen. However, for us as Aboriginal people, as Torres Strait Islander people in Australia, this declaration will only move along if we take it along. We know what the government's like. We know what the Australian population is like, the resistance, the vulnerability to anything that Aboriginal people might get returned raises a big scare across the country, as it did when governments changed in 1996, straight after the Native Title Act was adopted. So the declaration is for us to use as a tool. It's for us to go forward. And as Michael has already indicated, the declaration is for us to find the strength within. Culturally, as Aboriginal people, as Torres Strait Islander people, culturally, we are much more passive. We're not like the Native Americans, the people in North America who have a history of warriorhood, of fighting wars and battles, who even now continue to burn cars, to fire rifles and so on, to resist. We don't have that history when you look back over it, because we have a different society. We have a non-aggressive society. We have a way of being compatible and adapting to our environment. But it is a time now for us to find that resistance. We have to reach within. We have to start resisting. There were calls when the Native Title Intervention, Northern Territory Intervention went in. There were calls for the United Nations to speak to Australia and to rise up about it. And the United Nations will be heard on this issue. However, when you see it where I was in New York looking at it, we didn't see the resistance in Australia. I know it was there. I know that people were opposed to it. And it was hard for a lot of people to get media and get attention on their opposition to it. But we, as Michael was saying, we have to start rolling out the logs. We have to start putting up the signs of physical resistance. And we have to start demonstrating about how we really feel about our rights. And then we will see changes starting to scare. We have to scare the population of Australia. We can't just simply sit back and say, please, population of Australia, stop being racist. Please, population of Australia, vote in a government that will support our rights. We have to scare the population of Australia. We have to put it to the point where it has two options. It has one to oppose us and bring upon it the attention of the world, the way things have happened in Burma. And I'm not talking about being shot, but I'm saying we have to put that resistance up and we have to oppose it. Let me come back a little bit to the declaration. That declaration says clearly, Indigenous peoples have the right to self-determination. It's not a bodgy right of self-determination. It says at the beginning in the preamble, the right of Indigenous peoples to self-determination is the right of all peoples of the world to self-determination. We have the full right to determine who we are. We have the full right to determine what we want. We have the full right to determine what our futures will be for our children and for our next generations and so on. We have the full right to determine what culture and identity we want to maintain. We have a full right to represent our own interests where our interests are called for. We have the full right of self-determination. A word that Michael will use and in another forum I might use about sovereignty, it's the same thing. It's about we are empowered by our distinctive identity as peoples. And I wanted to make the call that this has got to go across all the nation, 400 to 500,000, whatever our population to be, we have to be operating as peoples. We have to be operating collectively as peoples exercising collective rights. Those people who want to be individuals, who want to get degrees or want to buy a house or want to get a good job, and they want to be an individual who advances to be equal to a white Australian economically or wealth-wise or social class-wise and so on, you have every right to pursue your right as an individual human being. But if you want to pursue your right as an Aboriginal, then you must pursue your right as part of Aboriginal peoples and as part of what Aboriginal peoples are about and how we see ourselves. It's about those Indigenous values, about how important our land, our country, our territory, our spirituality is to us. We have to collectively be prepared to say that these are the things that make us distinct. These are the things that in seven generations' time is going to make our peoples distinct. It's always going to keep us apart from the rest of Australians. It's going to keep us apart from the Asian populations coming in. It's going to keep us apart from the Africans that might come in. It's going to keep us apart from every community that might come into Australia and confuse about, you know, can you distinguish the Indigenous peoples in the world? It's because we are maintaining our distinct cultural, spiritual, religious values as peoples. And it has to be. I know we are peoples, but we have to start showing that we are peoples, that we are together. We are not dividing ourselves. We are not going off to assimilate faster than the other person. We are not grabbing for power's sake. We are not chasing the dollar. We are not wanting to tell our colleagues, our friends, our neighbours, our family what they should do and what they shouldn't do. And we are not running organisations called Aboriginal organisations that have only a policy of trying to assimilate us into the mainstream. We have the full right of self-determination as peoples, and that has to sink in. Whatever we do, whatever we say, whatever our organisations do, we have the right as peoples. The Declaration also says we have the full right to own our lands and territories and resources. And resources. That's the one thing Australia won't recognise. When the Woodward Commission started out to give its report to the Whitlam government to say what land rights should be for Indigenous peoples, it said clearly in that report, Indigenous peoples cannot have proper control over their lands and territories without the right of control over mining and resources. And it's clear in the first report ever commissioned by this government for land rights, but it has never been recognised, it's never been accepted, even in the native title legislation when it was drafted and adopted in 1993, they had a clause in there that we could only use the resources for our usufructuary rights, that we can only use our resources in a traditional way. We could not do any cultural, commercial exploitation of our resources. Time and time again, the government has tried to deny the fact that we can have the lands, but we can't have the resources to go with it. And as Michael has said, when we talk about where our wealth's going to come from, it's not going to come from CDP. It's not going to come from these jobs that they're doing through traineeships about trying to... It's not going to come from bringing our people from remote communities into the cities where the jobs are and so on. It's not going to even come from going to university and get tertiary degrees. It's going to, our wealth as Indigenous peoples in this country is going to come from our ownership and our control over our lands, our territories and resources. The Declaration says quite clearly in there specifically that where we have had our lands, territories or resources taken away, then they must be returned. There must be a form of reparation. There must be a form of restitution, preferably by returning back the same lands. If it can't be by returning back the same lands, by equivalent lands. If it can't be by equivalent lands, then it must be by some other means that we agree to, not what the government decides we're going to get, but by whatever we agree. We had the right to restitution. The Declaration also says we had the right to have our own representation. We can choose our own representatives. It's not for the government to choose who represents us. We had the right to the voice. As peoples, as collective rights, we had the right to our own representation. We can speak up for ourselves. Nobody will speak for us. The Declaration also says we had the right of free, prior, informed consent before any legislation is adopted that affects our privileges. We had the right to free, prior, informed consent before there is any program that's implemented for our benefit. We had the full right to free, prior, informed consent on any matters of service delivery that the government might want to do to us. These are already understood principles in international law. These are already understood and adopted norms internationally, but they are things that have been denied to us since 1788. We have been denied ever the right of exercising that free, prior, informed consent. And on it goes. There might be some of you who are saying, oh, the Declaration is not as strong as we wanted it. There are things that we fought for in there that didn't get in there. But all the key ingredients of this Declaration that we wanted are in there. And there are some things that had to be conceded, but when you weigh it all up, there was no real loss to it. The Declaration is everything we want and what we want to go forward. Everything we do in Australia must be put up against the standards that are contained in there. Now, Canada is already saying, we didn't vote for the Declaration, therefore it doesn't have anything to do in our country. Nobody can come in here and promote the Declaration in Canada. And I'm sure that's the same thing Australia would say if it wasn't in election mode at the moment. That is not true. It is the Universal Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. It is universal. It applies to every Indigenous peoples around the world, even Indigenous peoples in Australia, Canada, New Zealand, USA. The only difference is going to be how far those governments will go to promote and protect those rights are in there. But there is no denial of those rights existing for us here in Australia, and that we have every right to pursue those rights and adopt it. And every one of our organisations, every one of our leaders, whether they're true leaders or so-called leaders, every one of the representatives must base from now on in this new order, in this new world, this right that we have or these rights that we've always had but which are now recognised by the United Nations. It's not a piece of legislation that can get changed by the government. It's not like the Racial Discrimination Act, where the government passes another law and says the Racial Discrimination Act shall not apply. Michael talked about this is the worst period since 1967. I say this is worse than 1967. This goes takes us back even further than 1967. In 1967, the population of Australia, through referendum, decided to remove the discriminatory provisions from the Constitution. And in the process of doing that, it gave to the Commonwealth Government the right to make laws for Aboriginal people in this country. And everybody thought that was a good thing. Everybody thought this was it. The way the states have been exploiting us and our lands and our resources and our peoples and dividing us is now gone because the Commonwealth's there to protect us. But we have seen now that the Commonwealth has abused that responsibility and the power. And after 40 years after a referendum, get the 67 referendum removed, all of a sudden there's this invasion in the Northern Territory by the army, by the police, by the public servants. Billions of dollars being put behind this program, this mad experiment of a crazy man to invade us and take away our rights, which we thought we had won in 1967. And we've gone back, we've gone past there, because no longer do we have a Commonwealth government that is interested in protecting our rights as a national government, of protecting us from exploitation by the state governments. And in fact, as we know, over the years, the government has done everything as possibly can to put us back in the hands of the governments and to put us at the mercy of the governments in its own right. Let me, I wasn't going to quote directly from the Declaration because those of you who haven't, you know, you go out there and read it and carry it around and tell it to people, and I'll be spending at least the next year going around with a similar sort of message to the communities. But let me get back to this thing about the politics of all this. We have got to act. We have got to show, if there's a change of government on the 24th of November, after the 24th, if there is a change of government, we have got to show that government right from the very start that we will no longer accept treatment from the government the way that the Howard government or governments before it, the Fraser government, or any government before it, we will no longer accept the way that they have, are going or where they will decide what's good for us and what's not good for us. We have to go back and look at the models we've tried, the land rights laws, the ATSIC and NAC laws, and the other things, the programs, we were talking about the GDP and percentage of that, the way in which we're funded, the way in which we're economic. We have to look back and say, what are these things that we want? And we have to make it quite clear after the 24th of November, if we want to do it, we have to make it clear we will no longer accept these terms. That was 1788. Now this is 2007. It is time for us to stand up and rise. Now I've spent a good part of the last 6 or 7 years in the United Nations playing with pen, playing with words, arguing with governments about what should or shouldn't be put in the text. I'd rather come back here now, put my feet on the street or put my feet on the land, and I'd rather stand in front of a policeman. I'd rather stand in front of a vehicle. I'd rather stand in front of a bureaucrat than be sitting down drafting any more. The time has passed. We have to find it within ourselves. We have to say, this is not about, can I increase my salary next year? Will I get my tax cuts next year? This is about, we want to secure our rights as peoples. Not about today, but tomorrow, and for our next generation, and for the generation after that. And don't sign any agreement, don't make any decision if it doesn't benefit people in 7 generations' time. Forget about lining your packet. Get out there and fight for our rights to survive as Indigenous peoples, not to assimilate into the country. So I'm calling upon everyone. Now, there's a lot of, I know everyone here are supporters. I address myself to Indigenous peoples, but I say to the non-Indigenous peoples that are here, as Michael has said, we want your support. We want you behind us. We don't want you leading us. We don't want you speaking for us, but we want you backing us to do it. And for us, the people, the Aboriginal people, let us give them something to back. Thank you very much.